This is CliffCentral.com.
What I want to do is talk about Track for Mandela, if you don't mind. And we want to get our guests in here this morning. Angela Young, who's a climber, Richard Mabaso, who's a social entrepreneur and humanitarian, and Lynn Forbes, who's an inspirational speaker and entrepreneur and also well known to us as the mom of AKA. I'm going to talk to them about what they're doing up on Mount Kilimanjaro. Up on that high mountain!
Being cold will be one thing.
Yes, being cold is one of them, and they're doing it on Mandela Day. Have you ever climbed a high mountain, Gord?
I consider stairs to fall into that category, so yes, okay. Every goddamn day.
Ben, would you climb a high mountain?
Yeah, sure.
You'd do it. Is it part of your 100-day challenge?
If my drone would work at the top, I'd be in.
Sure. But the air is very thin up there. Your drone might fall down.
That's okay.
Well, they're launching drones on Mars, the new Mars Explorer that's busy off to Mars at the moment. When it gets there, it's going to launch drones.
Oh, yep. Wow. Look at that. All right, everybody. Come on in. Sit down. Grab yourself a seat. Let's get talking. How are you, Lynn? Nice to see you. Have a seat. Yeah. So it's the first time I've actually had you in the studio. Hey, Angela, how are you?
Hi.
Good. How's it? How's it, Richard?
How's it?
I'm good.
Good. Nice to see you guys. You're all crazy, right? Going up that mountain. I mean, haven't you heard some of the horror stories of people who just can't breathe at the top there? It's cold. It's high up. So, Angela, you're actually a climber, so you know what you're dealing with here.
I'm not a climber.
You're not? I thought you'd done this before.
Never.
You've never done this before?
Never.
You've never done it either, Lynn.
First time, but... so excited.
And you, Richard? You've done it. Okay, so you're the expert. Congratulations.
Yeah, not really. Not really, but I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be my sixth summit.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, come on, you're an expert then.
No.
Yes, you are. You're going to be helping everybody else. So who's the most nervous here out of these two?
I am.
You're not nervous at all, Lynn?
Not a little bit, but it's a good nervous.
Okay, all right. And Angela, you're a little antsy.
Yeah, excited at the same time also.
All right, well, let's just talk about this quickly. You're obviously a jewelry designer, Angela. You are someone who has been involved in the Impilo Collection, executive member of the Diamond Dealer Club of South Africa. And you are doing this because, obviously, same reason that everybody else is Track for Mandela. How did you get involved? Who asked you to do this? And why the hell would you say yes?
Because it's the first time I met Richard, and I thought, why would a man want to raise funds for sanitary pads? I was very curious about him. And
you thought there was something wrong.
Exactly. What's wrong with him? And then I met him. I spoke to Lynn, and I also get to know Lynn is climbing Kili with him.
Yeah.
And when I met up with Richard again, I actually told him, I saw my mom after 30 years. Last year was the first time I met my mom after 30 years.
Wow, what happened? How did you guys get separated? I mean,
yeah, my mom is Japanese. My dad is Chinese. So 40 years ago,
obviously, they didn't get along.
Yeah, the Chinese and the Japanese would never get along. And they got married. Yeah. So it's like a apartheid time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like a mixed colored.
Right. But this is fascinating. So you ended up with your dad.
Yes.
Huh.
So my dad was taken very hard, so he doesn't know how to look after me.
Uh-huh.
And so I look like a mess, so he doesn't know how to, he dressed me like a skirt and a pants at the same time.
Right.
I was tucked under his office desk and wait until he finished work. So his friend says to me, if you can't look after her, why don't you just send her to the orphanage? Or Auntie May, she's got mental illness. Just leave Angela.
With her?
With her. She's always at home.
And this was in China, right?
It was in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Because my mom just left. Because she couldn't cope with the differences between the culture.
And there would have been a lot of hostility towards her in China.
Exactly, in Hong Kong, at that time. And so my dad just hang on to me. He never did that to me. And so he got married again.
You could have been sent to an orphanage?
Yes, exactly. So,
jeez, what a story.
Exactly. So, so imagine my life couldn't be like who I am today.
But also, it's hard for a dad to raise a daughter. I mean, you know, a dad could, he kind of knows because he's a boy. He knows how to raise a boy. But some things about being a girl, things that dads are not entirely able to figure out on their own. And especially if, I'm sure he was as hardworking as he sounds, that you had to hide under the desk most of the time.
Yes. So that's what why I've been, it's been going on for 4 years.
That's incredible. And your mom and you were finally reunited after 30 years.
Yes. That was only last year where I went to Japan when I had my jewelry exhibitions. So I really fought for my life for the last 30 years.
How did you track her down?
So I was a Buddhist. I'm a Buddhist. So my Buddhist member actually helped me to track her down. And she says, I will help you, like, to find the pin in the ocean. So she really helped me.
Wow.
And because of the language barrier, I actually have to find another member to do the translation in between. So it was really, really hard. And the day I found her, it was her birthday. I don't even know this woman for a bowl of soap.
Wow.
Yeah, so that universe really answered my...
What was your feeling? How did it emotionally feel to see your mother for the first time in 30 years?
At the same time, you were worried about this woman. Was she abandoned me again? Right. Because... You know, I'm a woman, and I have a teenager girl, a daughter. Mm-hmm. Now I'm a mom. I have a successful business that I would like someone to accept me the way that I am. But it's very difficult. My heart was even. I felt like I'm almost. My heart is almost punked into my body.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that...
Did your mother recognize you?
She doesn't. She doesn't. She doesn't. She was looking at me. I only realized that she's this little short lady that I already grew up.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you thought... did you have expectations?
Because I have no expectations because... I'd rather have no expectations.
So was it a good experience or a bad one in retrospect?
It was a good experience. It was a very good experience.
Did you two talk to each other?
Yes. And she tried to explain to me why she left.
Wow. It must have been hard.
It was very hard. So that was one of the reasons I resonated with Richard's course.
Right.
And I decided to track for Mandela this year.
That's a beautiful story, and now you're doing it for your daughter because she's obviously, I mean, she, you know, your daughter, you're going to give her a life that you didn't have when you were a little girl. But for so many girls in this country, that's not possible, right?
Exactly.
And there's so many girls in this country who need all the help they can get, and who need basic things like, you know, sanitary pads. I mean, it's, you know, to most people it seems like
it was very difficult because I have my stepmom. She, when I had my period, I was 10.
Mm-hmm.
She actually told me that. Why would a little girl like you have your period?
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with
you? Made
you
feel ashamed and...
Yeah, so she would drag my hair and have a haircut if I do something wrong. That was one of my punishments, so I never have long hair. And like last year, I was one of the judges for Mrs. World.
Mm-hmm.
And my hair and everything was sponsored. I felt like... That moment was Cinderella moment in my life.
That's beautiful. Mm. Well, look at you now.
Exactly.
I mean, you look fantastic. Are you going to look terrible on the top of Kilimanjaro?
No, I can't
get
ahead be.
Of yourself. So,
Richard, I mean, obviously, finding the right people to go up onto this challenging trek is difficult, and you must. Have a lot of people who approach you and say, well, you know, we'd like to go.
Yeah.
I mean, tell me a little bit about the Imbumba Foundation.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. Imbumba Foundation was started in 2010 by myself. And as a boy who grew up in a rural village, I always had a dream of empowering others. And I think I always say, not exactly same as Angela, but growing up in a rural village, being poor, inspired me not to want to see another child going through what I went through. So, like, you know, coming from school, not having food at home, and just going to play with friends, and then when you come back at night, you just have to go sleep because you don't have anything to eat. And we were raised by a single mother who was a domestic worker in White River. I'm from Nelspruit. So she would be away for a month. And I always tell young people now when I speak to them that for me not to engage in drug abuse, you know, alcohol and all these funny things that young people do, it was a choice. It was a personal choice. There was no adult that I had to look up to or be scared of. So it was a choice that I had to make. But the long story short is that whole experience inspired me to want to do, to invest in my community by empowering young people. So Imbumba Foundation was started, therefore, to do numerous community projects by helping corporates through their CSI. So basically, we are saying to CSI, to companies, how can we help you change your CSI from an obligation to an opportunity? Because the fact that the government wants you to invest 1%, it might push, or it does push some companies to want to, you know, allocate, tick the box, and let's forget about it.
I think we're lucky in this country. There are a lot of companies that genuinely want to make a difference because they realize that that's good for the whole country.
Absolutely.
And that's good for their market as well then.
Absolutely. Yeah. So then fast forward in 2011, I just out of the blue, I was at home in Nelspruit, and then just out of the blue came my niece, who just came to tell my mom that she was having pains, and then it turned out those pains were she was going to start her periods for the first time ever in her life. Mm-hmm. And my mom shushed her and said, no, you can't talk about this in front of your uncle.
Yeah.
And then the story was the poor uncle had to keep quiet like he hasn't heard anything. And then they both disappeared. And
like so many men, when we hear about this stuff, we just go and run and hide.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they disappeared in front of me, and it worried me when I found out later through my sister that she was going to start her periods, because I said two things. One, if I was empowered as the uncle at that time, I would have engaged her in a conversation where she would have had a better understanding. But number two, I would have gone to the shop and bought the sanitary pad, because believe it or not, during that time, I would go to a supermarket, do a grocery. I could go from aisle A to aisle Z, but would never dare walk through the aisle of sanitary pads. So that was who I was.
Yes, so a lot of men, I think, feel that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the long story short, then, I decided to do something in the space to create the awareness, to raise the funds. And when I started my campaign just by approaching people, the question was, why are you doing this? Because you're a man. And I always had that question. And I just got
like
tired.
Like men shouldn't care about women.
Absolutely. So then I decided, out of the blue, I decided that I'll call the Nelson Mandela Foundation after discussing with Sibusiso Vilane, who's currently, I'm sure you know.
Yes, of course.
He's trying to get his third summit of Mount Everest.
Incredible.
So I called him to take me up Kilimanjaro, which he agreed. And then when he agreed, then I had to look for what would make this particular climb different, because we know people climb Kilimanjaro every day, but why would people want to come to climb with Richard? Then I decided to call the Nelson Mandela Foundation. I proposed to them that they endorse Trek for Mandela, because one, I want to summit on Mandela Day, but two, I will come back from the summit, and with the partners that I will bring on board, we will be distributing sanitary pads in schools every day from January until December, which then is in line with their mantra, which is make every day
a Mandela Day. Well, I mean, look at what you've done. Look at how this has grown.
Thank you.
And
well,
congratulations.
It's all thanks to South Africa and some non-South Africans who always want to get involved, not only by climbing the mountain, but through various platforms to support the initiative.
You're doing amazing
and
stuff.
And you as well, bringing us here. It's part of you playing your part.
This is the easiest part. I'm not climbing the mountain with you guys. But Angela, your story is beautiful. So Lynn, how did you get involved?
Okay, so I'm just listening to all the stories. And, you know, Gareth, if you look at the team that we have at the moment, I'm listening to Angela's story, and probably every person on this team has a story to tell. I have one to tell, too.
Mm-hmm.
So how I got involved, climbing Kilimanjaro has been an absolute lifelong childhood dream of mine. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting story. So, but just before I start with that, I think we just need to realize that for most of the people on this journey, and I speak for myself, but I think I can probably speak for everybody, is that when you climb a mountain, it's actually not about conquering the mountain. It's about conquering yourself or something in your life.
Right.
And for me, that's exactly what this is. So most people out there actually know by now that I actually endured a childhood sexual abuse as a 11-year-old girl. And Kilimanjaro was my place of escape, too. So Kili was always the place. I saw this place in pictures, but it was my little place above the clouds where I found my solace or my, I don't know, whatever you want to call that. So that has been something that I have always wanted to do, you know. And I never told anybody, not even my parents, about the sexual abuse until last year. 38 years of holding the secret. And then actually when Cairo, my granddaughter, was born in 2015, that was when I looked at her and I picked her up, I decided that I now need to fulfill this dream. And it was never about the mountain. It was about doing something, you know, huge.
Greater, something
great,
better than yourself.
Better than myself.
And something that didn't just mean you.
So Kilimanjaro is really just the symbol.
By the way, Cairo's been here, huh? You know she's been here to visit a couple of times.
Cairo's much more.
Well-traveled.
Cairo's well-traveled, much better than I am. So Cairo was the catalyst for me to finally make that decision, because being a girl, I obviously have two boys, and being a girl, I think, looking at her, I realized that, you know, I cannot keep quiet for much longer. I need to do something, not just for Cairo. So my little personal hashtag for this climb is climbing Kili for Cairo.
Mm-hmm.
There's caring for girls, but climbing Kili for Cairo. But Cairo symbolizes for me the children of this country, the
girls
of this country, and that we need to do something to change. You know, we've got a huge problem in South Africa when it comes to just abuse, violence against children.
Yeah.
So that's my reason. And then getting involved with Trek for Mandela, actually, it's my 50th birthday this year.
Hey, congrats.
So we are leaving for Kili the day after my 50th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah.
So my children, my son is giving, this is my 50th birthday present, number one.
Yeah.
Climbing Kili. And then I needed to do it for a good cause. So I spoke to Melanie Ramji, and I said, I want to climb Kilimanjaro. And she said, I'm sure they're fooling. You can't do it this year. I said, I decided I'm going to do it for my 50th birthday. And she said, I don't think there's any more space. And I thought, stuff you, Melanie. I'm emailing Richard.
And you got in.
I emailed him, and he said, we would absolutely love to have you. And here we are. Been training for 6 months.
Well, this is terrific. I mean, it seems like it's going to be a good crew of people up there. You're going to have to look after each other.
Yeah.
Obviously.
It's 42 of us.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big group.
It's very big.
Are there any weaklings you need to worry about more than others? People with breathing problems? Obese people?
Look, I think in the main, really, it's very exciting, and it's very difficult to determine who can or cannot go on Kili, because I'm sure you've heard of people breaking records climbing Kili with this or with that.
Yeah.
So it boils down to an individual, whereby we give you up to 6 months of training. We take them to Drakensberg. You can ask them. They see. Yeah. They know already how daunting that mountain is, and it's 26 kilometers. And sometimes they ask, why didn't you ask? You start us with 10 kilometers. I'm like, no. And, you know, because that's what they have to put in. And, you know, coming to the Westcliff, we're doing Westcliff stairs in a couple of days' time.
Right.
The first time they do 5 laps, which is going up the stairs, coming down. That's one. So
that's
they have to
lap.
Do. Yes. Yes, that's one lap. So they did one, and then the second one they did two. Now, in 2 weeks' time, less than 2 weeks' time, they're doing 27 laps.
No.
So, they have to start at 5 to finish at 1.
You know what, you guys, you're punishing yourselves. It's going to be horrible.
Start at 10.
So it's about giving them the opportunity to train, because at the end of the day, yes, we have 42 people. You are in a big group, but that does not mean that the group is going to carry you there. So we say the strange thing about climbing Kilimanjaro is that you go in a group, but it's always a personal journey. Mm. So you must make sure, I mean, we're getting people from as far as America. We're getting six climbers from the US, and they are coming in to like a week earlier to do an acclimatization walk. Mm. So they had to choose between Table Mountain and the Drakensberg, and of course they chose, I mean, Americans, they chose Table Mountain because they want to see a bit of Cape Town. But I think the long and short of it really is that you cannot choose who can or cannot go. People just need to understand, and that's the opportunity we give them through the training to understand how difficult that mountain is.
But I love how everybody has their own motivation for doing it as well, right? Yeah, and sometimes that's more important than their physical ability to do so, because that mental strength is hugely important.
Absolutely. Sibusiso climbed that mountain. He will be summiting for the 23rd time this year. Mm. But he will tell you every climb is different for him. Mm. And for me as well, my sixth climb, I can tell you now that from 2012 to now, it has always been different. So you can never say, I'm an expert, I can do that. No, you have to always prepare. You have to always be ready. You have to always be in the right space of mind and be able to put in the training. So when I go to Drakensberg, I also have to be there and be at the training myself, above and beyond the fact that I'm there to lead them or to coordinate, right. I also have to put in the time. So
right.
it is
you have to look after yourself as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, you know, if you let any of these balls drop, you're in trouble. It's serious. Guys, listen, congratulations. I think this is a terrific thing. And obviously, wherever we can get involved in anything around Mandela Day, we're always excited to. And I think it's just terrific that the Nelson Mandela Foundation and that you three and all the other people who are going on the climb are getting behind this. And you know, God bless you. The girls in this country need you.
Absolutely.
So keep doing the good work. And Lynn, tell your son to come and visit us sometime again. I haven't seen him in a while.
I'll try. He doesn't
you like his
to
music?
Me.
You listen to his music?
I know certain songs, man. I don't know. It's a rap, you know. I love his songs. I love his songs.
Yes, no. You're originally a teacher, right?
I'm a teacher by profession.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we are. All right. So we got teaching. We've got jewelry. We've got trusts and foundations that look after South Africa's girls. All sounds like a very good combination. All the best to all three of you and everybody else.
Can I say one more comment?
But you better hurry up.
Okay. Cool. I'm climbing this mountain for 10 years. So it's a 10-year project, and I'm 3 more years to go. So can I put it out there that we are inviting you?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm not climbing. Forget about it. I'm not even leaving my house. I'll tell you right up front now, it's never going to happen. I don't mind talking and interviewing. The furthest I'll go is the Nelson Mandela Foundation. That's too far. And I won't walk, I'll drive. You guys are much braver than me. No, you know what? I love you guys. Keep doing your good work. God bless you, but I'm not going.
Thank you.
I'll die there, I promise you. I will die on that mountain. Forget about it. All right, thank you, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.